Welcome to Baldy Go, the officially unofficial podcast for everything Star Trek except the animated series Voyager, Enterprise, Prodigy, and Discovery. I think that's everything.
The animated series. Get that shit out of here.
And the
one in my
series,
podcast. Actually, I've seen the animated series, so.
Oh, well, then I got to take that off the list. Great. Mark it off. We are here. I'm Jim. You're Aaron.
Aaron. Yes.
We're here to talk season 2, episode 8 of Strange New Worlds, Under the Cloak of War. Aaron, where do you stand on justice?
You know, what is justice? What works
exactly
for the most amount of people? I thought this was a great episode.
Yeah.
And it was fighting because, like, one of my least favorite things, it used to be my favorite. I loved a good war episode in a science fiction series. And then I grew up and learned that most of these war things are just literally shit that happened in, like, I don't know, the Napoleonic War that these people learned about in a semester in college and just filed off out of serial numbers, gave everyone a phaser rifle. You see bayonet charges and shit in some of these things, mm-hmm. and I'm like, come mm-hmm. on. So, like, I got a little nervous when, oh, we're gonna do a combat episode. We're gonna see why Mbinga and Nurse Chapel are so traumatized. But then they took it to, like, a MASH direction, which I thought was kind of interesting, like seeing Starfleet triage these mm-hmm. war wounds. And then they had, like, you know, what I can only describe as a pretty twisty, entertaining the plot point that ultimately did a lot to kind of, like, flesh out Mbinga's character and made him into, like, a top tier badass on this show now. I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was great. Loved the guest star. Loved seeing Bunny Colvin from The Wire as this Klingon
diplomat.
That's
who he was.
Yeah.
I was like, man, this guy looks familiar. Yep.
Sometimes it's hard to tell under the turtle shell, but, he's just recently Janice's father on Barry. I like this episode a lot. I think this is, like, approaching a great Star Trek, like, great, like, capital G great Star Trek episode. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that really got me is just the contemplation of redemption and punishment and their roles in justice. I think, like, and what justice means personally versus what it means societally, right? I mean, those are big questions, and there isn't a great answer for that. And this episode gets to the heart of that. Like, nothing feels right here. It all depends on your perspective.
Yeah, that's why it's a capital G great. The best Star Trek episodes don't end with Picard giving his great speech, and it's like you clap yourself on the back, and everybody, it's the ones where, like, Picard's looking haunted outside the ready room window because he just told an ensign something he might not believe, or there is, like, you know, it's like, what is, like, I mean, I think there's very clearly what is the best thing.
Sure.
But then
sure.
it's like, but why is that justice? You know, like, do you, like, if sometimes the best thing is letting the worst person off the hook for something, mm-hmm. but that's still the best in terms of your country, in terms of your city, in terms of the galaxy sometimes, you know?
Yeah. But it might feel bad to the people who are personally affected by things that happened.
Yeah, which is, like, also, like, I really like how they kind of centered that, like, it's up to the people who are most impacted by something to get over it, right? Or to
you
know, I guess,
to live with
continue
it,
to fight. Yeah, they either, mm-hmm. that's the choice. So they either have to keep fighting or they have to learn to live with it. And, the attitudes versus people who were there versus people who weren't. People have an opinion on it because, you know, they have political opinions versus people who actually did the fighting and dying. And it was just, like I said, a fascinating episode, extraordinarily well acted. I didn't really see the twist coming until it happened. And it also, like, you know, it has me going back and looking at some of the things that Mbinga has said over this season and last, and, like, things are snapping in place. Like, and even there's a little bit of his daughter's arc in
this. Yeah.
I thought that was fun. And also, like, man, going back and rewatching his early arc last season, like, losing his daughter might be the only thing that was tethering him to kind of, like, full blown humanity. You know, like, obviously that's something that preoccupied him. It's like, I don't want to change. I don't want to be a different person. I owe it to my family to come back intact, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't. And he's, like, at this point in the season, he's lost he's lost everything. He just keeps going because, like, it's like I like that scene. It's like, you know, so what are we supposed to do? Just put on the Federation face? It's a good face, you know? Like, it is probably the best thing to do in all situations, but can you do it? Can you keep doing it? Can you do it for the rest of your life? Can you do it in an intense diplomatic mission? It's fascinating stuff.
One that you're personally connected to. No, it was a great episode. I'm curious what you think about it. I had this feeling while watching this episode that Star Trek Strange New Worlds is telling its stories in a sort of post hoc way. Because we knew about this Protocol 12 stuff, right? This green ship that you inject and it amps you up and you go off killing a bunch of Klingons. But we didn't really know any of the context around that. And this episode gives us so much more context. But it doesn't feel like that stuff was foreshadowing. I've seen foreshadowing done. This feels like a post hoc storytelling. And I don't know if there's a difference fundamentally, but something about it feels like there is a distinction to be made there.
Like, was they it like foreshadowing?
They're just
say...
telling the story after the fact.
Yeah, like I think, but it gives that effect of a richer. And we talk about this all the time on Breaking Bad. How like,
yeah,
you know, so is a cottage industry to go back and be like, oh my God, look at this thing in Gail's apartment where it's a statue, it's a bust with its face half like disfigured or something, and like that was in the end of season two, and look what happens at the end of season. And like Vince Gilligan would be the first to tell you, he's like, we didn't think about that in advance. It's just that we're fans of our show and we remembered that the prop guy put this weird statue in Gale's, and like it's something that we can build on. It's something, and we called it strip mining the past to build into the future. Like, you know, go through and like, what are, if you're a fan of your show and you're a fan of the characters, you remember little details that you can build on to make it seem like you've architected some plot. So like, I guess I don't have a big problem with it. In fact, I think it feels very satisfying. Like, obviously, this was written backwards. They didn't have Mbinga's backstory written
when they introduced
before the whole daughter stuff. But it's like, you know, like, and coming up with like, oh shit, we just deleted the only interesting thing about this character's arc. Like challenging themselves is like, well, why did he do that, or how did he know how to do that, or how? I think that's really cool.
Yeah. It's borderline retconning for me in some ways. Like, the thing that really stuck out to me is last episode where we talked about that poster of Una that was in Boimler's bunk or whatever. That made me feel like they're just retconning things, because that poster's I don't know, maybe that poster is there from the beginning, but I assume it's not. And if it's not, then that's like very much a we put that there because we wanted to make this joke on this episode. This feels a little different, but pretty close to it. And I guess that's the
past. Like we always say, there's, you know, like, can you get away with this? Can you get away with that on show? And my answer is like, you can get away with anything as long as you do it well.
Sure.
But there's some things that are harder to do, some things. So it's like, I think everybody has room where they can disagree. But I like I said, I think this is a good use of that strip mining, or good use of going through your past to try to figure out what to do with characters, because I would have thought that Mbinga was not, you know, it's like, well, shit, they shot his shot, you know, like, but they came up with something arguably even more interesting about him. So something to keep an eye on. But like, I also think it might turn out to be like a hallmark of the show, because, they got such a great cast and such a wide crew that, like, in the old days, if you were a Sulu, well, in the old days, if you were a Sulu or Chekhov, you just didn't get plots. You know, you just did, like, if you're lucky and you're George, it's George Takei, like, if he's lucky, he'll get to run around with his shirt off with a sword for 30 seconds. So it's like, oh, Sulu's a swordsman. Oh, that's interesting. But, like, in the Next Generation era, it's like, Troy would be lucky if she got one decent plot a season. And now you only got 10 episodes, so how do you service all this plot? Like, I think it's kind of, if you can find the nugget of something interesting and bring that into a whole episode, it kind of like makes it feel like it's a bigger footprint, because that has you reevaluating all those things. So I don't know. It's something to keep an eye on, but I like what they're doing with it so far.
Yeah, me too. All right, maybe we should get into the recap.
Let's do it. Set phasers to add. We'll be right back. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy. And strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our four-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Captain on Bridge, welcome back to Baldy Go.
We start off in the Prospero system. Enterprise is rendezvousing with Kelsey and May. There's another one where we had screeners. I don't have subtitles. Kelsey
it's
and May.
It's the USS Kelsey May, and I searched. I can't find a damn thing about, like, a famous Kelsey May in memory, Starship Kelsey May. There's lots of Kelseys. There's lots of Kelsey Mays that have, like, but they seem like they're just civilians. Like, they're just,
yeah,
you know,
I don't
people.
Know what the connection is.
But it's a really cool looking starship.
Okay. I suppose.
I kind of a sucker for those single nacelle kind of scout ship looking designs.
Gotcha. Yeah, they always look kind of particular... goofy to me, but.
You think so? Huh.
Yeah, something about the single nacelle. I mean, if I were to rank number of nacelles, it'd be two at the top, three,
sure.
And then one.
Ah.
Get that future Enterprise going.
I think it might be a 2-1-3 guy, because I do like, right. Like this right. Is not, this is the, normally it's like a single saucer with a single nacelle. And I think yeah. That looks, that's fucking iconic. It looks cool. This is like a much more streamlined, it's not even a nacelle. It's like a beak. It kind of looks like a almost a Romulan warbird front glued on to a Federation nacelle. But I dug it. I thought it was cool. I could see that model on my shelf.
Sure. They're there to pick up a former Klingon general who defected, is now an ambassador. This guy is, I think his name is Doc Ra, but everybody calls him Ra. I'm glad he's cool with nicknames, because, boy, yeah, Klingon names, they're a mouthful. Their mission is to deliver him.
Oh my God, Galron.
Well, he's
how can you possibly pronounce these things? Duras. Woof, that's a rough one.
Their mission is to deliver him to Starbase 12. The ambassador beams aboard and asks for a tour of the ship.
You know, the other thing I like about the scene,
yeah,
other than the cool starship, the bosun's whistle. Because I've talked about, like, why do sometimes they blow these fucking things and why don't? And, like, I thought that the episode actually taking a stab at, like, this is a tradition we like doing on this ship because it's an old date. Like, it's something that, like, maybe it goes to captain, ship to ship. It's not an official Starfleet thing. It's just...
And guest to guest. We roll out the red carpet for the ambassador. We maybe don't do it for Joe Schmo.
Kind of bother me to talk about rolling out the red carpet and they're not in their dress uniforms, which I think are amazing looking.
Yeah,
like they're having an official state dinner and like you got these awesome dress uniforms. Don't get them out just for the fucking trials, man.
Mm-hmm. Is it really that strange for a guest to ask for a tour? And knowing what we know about this particular guest, I get it. Una and Lon are just like, I don't know.
Well, it's more of like, I guess it's for us is like knowing how many traumatized veterans are aboard that you're going to parade this war criminal around. But also, I don't know. I think there's an element of like, we were just at war with these guys. We're not even sure if this guy's sincere. We're going to like parade him around a flagship so we can see all of our technology. Like,
yeah. Definitely. They wonder if he's a spy or something for the Klingons.
Ortega's like got a black bag ready, so it's like, yeah, we'll take you around the ship. You just won't be able to see anything.
Has any guest in Star Trek ever gone directly from the transporter to their quarters? Or have they all gone, you know, I want to see this or I want to see that?
If they do, it's always a plot point. Like, I think Ambassador Sarek might have pulled that, but then it's like he's got Jumanji syndrome or whatever, and it's gonna turn him into a rhino or Robin Williams.
Yep. But, I just think it's hilarious, though, because they're always like, oh, we'll take you to your quarters. And they're like, no, I want to see 10 Forward. I want to see, you know, your famous engineer. I want to see whatever.
We talked about the Bunny Colvin of it all. Robert Wisdom is the guest star who plays Ra, and I like him. I think he's really good in this role because the thing about Robert is he's a big guy and intimidating, but he also has this kind of gregarious teddy bear, non-threatening mode that he can go into, and like I think it works both. It especially works really well when he's fighting with Mbinga at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he's a formidable person, but you also get the idea that he's trying very hard to hide that, and that really, really worked well for this Klingon ambassador guy.
Yeah, warrior turned diplomat, definitely. Yeah. So we go to the bridge where Uhura and Ortegas are talking about Ra, and Uhura thinks his resume is impressive. Ortegas doesn't trust him. She's arguing her case with some specifics when Ra steps onto the bridge just in time to hear her call him a butcher, and he ignores it and praises the Federation ships.
The restraint of the writers not to have Ortega be like, he's behind me, isn't he? Because that's totally the trope they're going for.
100%. And solid diplomatic restraint here from Ra. You know, you're getting called out right there on the bridge.
Yeah.
And should just let that just run right over you. Yeah.
Good restraint from the butcher of Jagal. Mm-hmm. You gotta love the butcher's restraint here.
Well, he's reformed. He's reformed. No longer a butcher.
It's interesting the way he's doing this diplomacy is it seems like that he is talking down his race as a way to disarm the opposition, which I thought was really interesting. You know, he is saying, oh, you know, I've always said that the Federation ships are better than Klingons. Later, you know, Spock is going to try to treat him to a Klingon delicacy. And he's like, there's nothing to culturally experience. We're a warmongering race limited by our ideology. Like, it's like there's a lot of internalized hatred.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's real or if it's something that he's just using because it ingratiates him with Federation people, because he's essentially telling them the bigotries that they believe, and then it's like that makes him more trustworthy. And
he's reaffirming the opinions that they might already have of the Klingons.
It seems to be something that's very tempting if you're a minority in a situation, especially if you're a persecuted minority. Like it's a way to get into the in group, and I feel like yeah, he's running the whole Klingon race down. Maybe because he wants peace. Maybe because he, doesn't want to be for a tribunal. It's interesting because like I haven't fully processed everything I've learned about this episode into like integrated it. Like I'm trying to think back of all the, you know, like why is he really feel guilty about his role? Because he wasn't the butcher from the Klingon's perspective, but he is every bit the war criminal from the Federation. Like, he did order the death of everyone that was a non-Klingon, whether they were a combatant or not. So, like, is this a legitimate, like, I got sick of war? Is this a, I got captured by the Federation, and this is the only way I can keep from, you know, life in a penal colony? Do you have any ideas on...
I do. I have some feelings on that. I kind of want to save it to the end with that... discussion that he and Mbinga have, because that's the real meat of it, right? When we find out that this has all been a lie, and well, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi from a certain point of view kind of thing.
Because we'll, if I step back from and look at the whole of canonical Star Trek, I think they're telling a story of a very proud race that correctly saw that they are going to change forever if they join the Federation, and elements of that race, you know, wanted to remain what they considered pure Klingon and resisted that far past the point. And then that's like the modern Trek element of the, and then the classic, the series Trek was essentially the Soviets who, you know, had the were trying to compete, keep up with the other great power, went bankrupt, blew up their world, you know, overrunning their reactor, very Chernobyl-esque kind of thing. And it feels like they're trying to marry those two worldviews by saying, like, the thing that motivated, like, because, like, there was nothing very Soviet or communist about the Klingons. It was just, you know, the Soviet world events with a completely different type of culture. And it feels like they're trying to kind of marry that together. Cause it's like, well, why were the Klingons trying to keep up? Why were they trying to do this? Why were they trying? It's because they wanted to maintain this kind of fierce, independent warrior identity that is going to be incompatible with joining the Federation. So I kind of like that it seems like a big project of this era of Star Trek is kind of like not retconning, but trying to make all the Trek canon work and kind of hold together better than it was doing like 5-10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they kind of managed that. You know, you look at their relationship with the Federation 100 years from now. It's sort of the next generation Deep Space Nine era, and you know, it's not. In some cases, they're allies. In some cases, they're at war. In some cases, they butt heads. Sometimes they don't. So yeah, they have not been fully integrated. They're still their own kingdom, but like
it's like 19th century U.S. American or U.S. Britain relations, you know. There's there's still a lot of sore stuff about the, but like it, there's also, you know, the ally and trade is doing what it's going to do, and
then every once in a while, you know, they'll be on the opposite sides of a conflict or argument or something.
Sure
Or threatened to be anyway. And at the end of this scene, I really love this line from Pike. It's maybe the most cutting "as you were" as I've ever heard. Boy, the look he gives Ortegas, he's like, "as you were," after she's just gone on this tirade and insulted this ambassador. It's really great.
Pike runs a loose ship, I'm gonna say it. Discipline goes by the board on this ship. And I don't know if they're gonna make that a plot point that's eventually going to have to be or if this is like, you know, Pike, it's like, well, I'm gonna die and I'm trying not to be me. I don't know, but like it kind of bothers me that, because I feel like, but this shit goes down on Enterprise D and you're confined to quarters for the rest of the diplomat stay, because like I clearly can't, I'm not gonna fucking invite you to a state dinner so you can do it, you can grandstand to his face how you did behind his back, like We have feedback on this. People are starting to see Pike as Pike's a little bit of a...
He's lenient, man. He's real lenient.
That's maybe, bad. I mean, I'm...
maybe he's trying to garner a whole bunch of goodwill for the GoFundMe for his medical expenses that he knows he's going to have in a few years. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to need a lot of plastic surgery. Need a lot of favor. Yeah.
You think those wheelchairs are cheap, man? No way.
got the one LED that blinks yes or no. That costs half a year's pay for an LED. And you don't want to know how I control it.
No. All right. Spock is working out the kinks in the ambassador's indigenous Klingon drink. It's a Ractogino. When the tour arrives in the bar, the ambassador tries the drink, but it's incredibly hot and it burns him.
Uncharacteristic fuck up by Spock. Like, how are you gonna program a Ractogino replicator and not even try it? Like, you don't even pick up the cup?
I can understand not getting the flavor right, but you have not mastered hot versus cold in your code.
That's rough, and it's almost, man. Like, I feel like they should have given this to something that, like, you got the idea that maybe it was a little vindictive. You know, like, Spock is like, I don't buy that he would make the fuck up, and I don't buy that Spock has so strong feelings about the Klingon Federation war that he would intentionally try to burn someone as, like, a fuck you. Like, if they give that to Ortega, or something like that, that where, like, they could do it with a little bit of, like, a brittle smile or, like, but then again, it's like, what would Pike do? Confine him to quarters? Give him a stern, that'll be all, mister? I don't know. But they just need to get him to the sick bay at all costs so that Mbinga can flip the fuck out.
So whatever. Let's go there. Pike takes Ra to sick bay to heal his coffee burn. Mbinga's freaked out and has a panic attack. And he's got a more serious history with the Klingons than I even thought. You know, I knew he was in the war. I knew he had some personal relationship to it, but this is a severe reaction.
Well, it works up because, like, you know, we've heard about J'Gal so much. Like, it's been in these hushed tones. We know it's fucked up Chapel and Mbinga. One Klingon was openly dismissive at a claim to be a survivor of J'Gal because no one survived J'Gal. Like, that was the whole fucking point.
Yeah.
And it's like, so, like, when we are on the moon of J'Gal, I'm like, ooh, this is pretty exciting. Probably going to be some dumb military sci-fi action, but it's going to be some good character work. And I was pleasantly surprised because it wasn't nearly as stupid as I thought.
Yeah, we go to the moon of J'Gal a few years ago. They aren't specific about it. Chapel's being shuttled into an active war zone. They drop her off at a Federation outpost we're going to call Tent City, where she meets Commander Martinez, a.k.a. Buck, a.k.a. Clint Howard, a.k.a. the Chief Medical Officer. And she's here to be the new head nurse. Clint Howard.
Clint Howard, everybody. Ron's younger brother?
I believe so, and this is actually a deep Star Trek the original series cut. He played, do you remember that? So I don't think I've seen the episode, but there is, like, a very young ruler, like, extraordinarily young ruler, almost a baby, in one of the episodes, and he plays that character as a very young child.
Yes, I remember, because he's goofy looking.
Very, he's got this stupid headband. And he's wearing like a green,
Wow.
Deep cut here.
I had no idea.
Yeah, what is this? Like 60 years later, here comes Clint Howard to play another 50. Character in Star Trek?
That's 50 anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Holy cow.
So, like, I want to talk about this because this is some of the stupid shit. I don't know why a Starfleet shuttlecraft with blast shield windows has to do a low flyby to beam someone down. Like, maybe they said something about there's transporter scramblers or something.
Sure,
but, like,
dampening fields.
They just want a hot landing in Vietnam, right? It's like this hot LZ. Got the nurse dropped in there. There's Tent City. Like, what the fuck? What? Mm-hmm. This is the 23rd century. People are, like, camping in tents within eye shot of the enemy. Like, you can see, like, the Klingon turbo laser batteries or whatever fucking, like, lighting up the, like, just constant war. Like, wouldn't this shit be underground, or wouldn't it be, like, shielded or close? Just, like, they're so I started to get annoyed, like, oh god, it's gonna be one of these things. But I feel like once they got off and, like, stopped trying to, like, do a realistic war thing and just made it about treating and stabilizing people, the shit really came to life.
Yeah, for sure. The scale of it, I agree, is kind of off. when you have these huge energy weapons. And I mean, even if you look at World War One, the scale, the ranges that we're talking about are like, you're never going to see the enemy. You're just going to get bombed. You're going to get obliterated from nowhere, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, we're also talking about, this is a show that shows ships engaging in like 1/4 impulse, 25% the speed of light combat, and they're moving like ocean liners within like, what, 300 feet of each other? like, there's some things you just kind of have to take that like, this isn't literally what's happening, but yeah. And then also it's like, what are we going to do? You're going to do a fucking sci-fi Saving Private Ryan or like Edge of Tomorrow type thing in an hour? No, you can't. You're going to do some kind of essentially updated MASH episode. Instead of a helicopter, you got a shuttlecraft, and you're going to do the best you can. And I think they did.
And also, this is light years better than anything that has happened in previous Star Treks, right?
Oh, it's funny because like just like a month ago, I saw... was it the Battle of Valley 357 or something? The Siege
the Deep
of
Space Nine.
Yeah, the Deep Space Nine episode with Raymond Cruz.
Yeah,
the one where Nog gets his arm or leg blown off.
It's just a bunch of foam rocks.
Yeah,
and like people dancing around, pointing phasers at each other. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And everything comes down to a bayonet charge by the Jem'Hadar and hand to hand combat. Lots of more hand to hand combat in this almost in Warhammer 40K. But they did a good job.
Speaking of bayonet charges, why have we never seen a lightsaber bayonet charge in Star Wars?
That's a good question. Probably because it'd be fucking stupid. It's like Star Wars knows.
It would be stupid for sure.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be a charge, but just a gun with a blade on it would naturally be a lightsaber, right?
I feel like lightsabers are Jedi only. Like, you know, vibro bayonet charge. That's what you got.
Can I
ask you something? What is Clint Howard screaming when the incoming transports come? Is it Bills and Bones?
No idea.
I couldn't figure out what, like, I thought it's like, well, if I search for Bills and Bones or something, Bills and Bones MASH, Bills and Bones military slang, I thought that because this has got to be a reference to something. And I don't have subtitles because these are screeners. So if you do know what the hell he's saying, Star Trek at baldmove.com. I just want to get that if you knew.
Tent City receives a bunch of wounded. They don't know each other yet, but Mbinga and Chapel begin triaging the wounded. They are woefully under-equipped to deal with the inflow, so Mbinga shows Chapel how to stuff wounded soldiers into the transporter buffer so they can keep longer. It's like putting them in the fridge. This is great. This is what I always wanted to see. I mean, use your transporter in novel and interesting ways, and the fact that it comes back later and is a point of drama with Chapel and Mbinga is just icing on the cake.
Yeah, the fact that this is him perfecting his saving my daughter technique is great. I like the idea of, like, you know, you got a big battle starting and then just the transporters just going off, bringing in, it's effective, like the incoming transport and this fresh group of bodies, and seeing this montage of them quickly assessing and triaging the wounded. They don't have an organ regenerator, so they're gonna essentially, it's like suddenly they're back to 21st century science. And like you said, it ties into his backstory very well. And there's also this layers of, you know, Mbinga is not the chief medical officer. They don't even call him a doctor. It's just like, oh, he's pretty useful for certain things. It's like you get this idea. It's like, what the fuck is Mbinga? And by the end of the episode, you have a very clear idea, but I like how they just kind of layer on the understandings of his character, starting, you know, in the first 5 minutes here.
Mm-hmm. Is this before or after he's done the transporter trick with his daughter?
Way before. This is like, I think 5 to 10 years before the series starts.
It just says several years ago, which.
Well, so like this Klingon Civil War starts at the very beginning of Disco, because I actually saw when they were showing the weird Klingons with their heads. I'm like, what the fuck? This is Disco. Yeah, I saw the whole first season. And then Spock shows up at the end of Disco, or in the latest seasons of Disco, and then they get spin off into this. So, like, I think this is in a 5 or 10 year period.
Okay.
Especially since they, like, Chapel's pretty young and she hasn't visibly aged.
True. Yeah. Neither of them really have.
And Mbinga already has a daughter, but she hasn't grown up. Of course, she wouldn't grow up much, right? She's been stuck in a transporter for God knows how long.
Yeah, so I was wondering, like, how long has she been in the transporter?
75 years.
Probably not.
Mbinga takes good care of himself. Turns out he's wrong about Protocol 12. It just does nothing but good. Lets you split Klingons in half and extends your life. Makes you better looking, muscle tone. Did you see Mbinga running around in his regulation issue Starfleet underwear?
No, he's in
Dude's
Starfleet
rocking
underwear.
A body.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's in good shape. Everybody on the show is in good shape. Including Spock.
Clint Howard?
No, never mind. I mean, hell, he's probably 80 years old. Who knows? He's in great shape.
He's in a shape.
Yeah, he's in Clint Howard shape. That's good enough for Clint Howard. All right, present day. Pike asks Mbinga for some Delton parsley, and his visit is mostly to check in, though. See how Mbinga's doing with the Butcher of Jagal on board, and ask him to meet with Ra as a veteran to make him feel more welcome. And so he invites actually Mbinga and Chapel to dinner with Ra, and they both say they'll be there.
Pike knows that he's got a potential problem here with Mbinga. It's funny that he seems like they are good friends and they go way back, but there's still a lot of things that Mbinga keeps to himself. Like, Pike knows it's like, you know, but you know, obviously Mbinga's keeping a lot. Like, he's doing literally black ops that no one knows about, so I guess that makes sense.
Seems to be a pretty private guy.
I like his line, I've handled worse than polite dissatisfaction, and then like Chapel saying we got this, which is kind of like their phrase. Like how they have a lot of nice transitions in this episode, and this is one of them where that kind of like triggers a reverie for him.
Yep, and they're gonna do that a few times. And there's this idea that, you know, he doesn't want to give Ra the satisfaction of chasing him away from the captain's table, which makes sense.
I also really like the symmetry they have with Mbinga trying to fix this medical bed and saying it's never been the same since the Gorn attack, which is probably the most traumatic episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds that we've seen. So it's like, you know, and there's that very traumatic episode, some piece of equipment got damaged beyond repair, it can only be maintained. And it's clearly, you know, this is a stand-in for people like Ortegas and Chapel and Mbinga, but like I like how they even added that little bit of storytelling to the thing too. That, you know, tying it back into like when we were traumatized as a viewer, this poor sick bed got fucked up too.
Yeah, if it wasn't a metaphor, I'd say, well, just replace the fucking thing, obviously. But I get it.
Do you know how much Romulan ale it costs to get Starfleet Medical to ship you a new sick bed?
None? Zero? I don't know. I mean, it's not wartime anymore. Let's get some sick beds going.
Yeah, I do like, I guess that does make sense that the only time the things that you'd be reduced to like bartering shit in the Federation is during times of war, because it is stressing like its ability to produce. Yeah, what kind of deprivations happen in the Federation when they're at an existential war? Like, what's life on Earth get like? Does like Sisko's dad still fuck around in his French Quarter place? People start wearing like recycled paper clothing like they do on The Expanse? Or then when the peace is declared, everyone breaks out the silks and the wools again? I don't know. I really would like to, because it's not unlimited. The Federation doesn't have unlimited resources.
True. No, you don't want to know what's in Sisko's dad's jambalaya when it's war time. Don't ask.
Oh, God. Klingon POWs.
Oh, yeah.
See, you said not to ask. You said not to ask.
Yeah. I'm not telling you. Red alert. Here comes an ad break.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to Baldly Go. All right. And Binga flashes back. You were talking about the We Got This thing. This is that scene. To an operation where he and Chapel saved a man by manually pumping his heart with their hands. This, I guess, is reasonable science. I mean, you could go in and squeeze a man's heart to keep it pumping.
The first time I saw this was in, I think, season one of ER, where...
was it Clooney?
Your boy Clooney, Noah like Wiley.
Yeah, I could see him squeezing a heart.
Was like a surgery, and I think Anthony Edwards had him do this manual heart massage. Because it's the thing about the heart and the reason why CPR works is there's like these one-way valves, and like if you just squeeze that thing, all the blood will go to the right places because it's the only way it can go. So, I remember that the Noah Wiley with his, guys, hands up to his elbow and some patient's cavities squeezing their heart. So I guess it does work.
It's going to be up to his elbow. Where did he go in? Going through the chest, man. Make an incision. I don't know.
Well, so ER is an emergency room. This is not necessarily stuff you're doing in like the nice, neat surgical ward where you had everybody properly cracked open with their ribs. And,
gotcha.
Here's my question. You can do that.
We're in a triage situation. Are you really cutting somebody open to pump their heart manually? Is there nothing better? No one more hopeful that Chapel could be helping in this moment?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe this is the best case scenario they got,
I guess. They had a steady stream of wounded. I would imagine, just go move on to the person who doesn't need their heart manually pumped.
Or get a stasis field to pump it. Don't get someone's grimy mitts up in there.
Why didn't they put more people into the transporter buffer? Like, you could have stuck this kid in the transporter buffer mid-surgery with his heart going out.
This is true.
You got tons of room. Well, I saw at the end you had 5, 6, 8 people coming through.
Yeah,
because
my question was how many people can stay in a buffer at one time? And is that
there's only
be a
one
problem?
In
but
there.
You're right. There was quite a few slots, more than one.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I got the idea that this isn't there's not the other side. There's one transporter pad. There's probably multiple transporter pads from multiple battles. They're all feeding into this one surgical hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know your point still stands. It seems like they could do a hell of a lot more.
Buffer was not full.
Yeah. In terms of cryogenic suspension, in terms of, forget the pattern buffer. They have long-term sleeper ship technology in Star Trek. They kind of don't use it anymore because they got warp travel, but
I wasn't aware of that.
There was a whole Star Trek Next Generation plot where they found a bunch of 21st century people that were in a satellite that they were launched to remain frozen in space and they got lost somehow. Remember that? Huh. They had like the Texas oil man, the housewife who, why the fuck was she there? And then the rich stock market guy that wanted to know what his stocks were. And Picard's like, oh, you poor fool. We're all right. Communists now. We don't do this shit.
Yes, I forgot about that episode. There's one in
Khan.
DS9.
They found Khan cryogenically preserved in the first place. True. So like they don't do it anymore because you can just get across the galaxy in a blink of an eye. But like, surely they haven't forgotten.
No, there's definitely a DS9 where the Cardassians do that and leave like a trap of three soldiers on one of their stations to be cryogenically unfrozen.
Literally sleeper agents.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I forgot about the Federation doing that. Anyway, yeah, they could have got a lot more people in there. They didn't. So Mbinga catches Ortegas bailing on the dinner, and we're back in present day, by the way. He tells her that he's going because he wants to see if Ra has genuinely reformed, and invites her to do the same, and she accepts.
Plus, you got Pike making jambalaya, which I gotta say, speaking of transitions, it does look delicious.
Okay. Yeah.
Surprisingly good food porn on Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Mm-hmm. And you just got to watch how much Dalton Parsley you put in there.
True.
You might want to ask before you taste it.
If your lips go numb, report the sick bay immediately. Nobody will be there, apparently, because everyone's at the General Ra's banquet. But I really like that the line here. It's like, let's you know, if you pretend he's pretending, well, sometimes people pretend long enough becomes the truth. Because Mbinga at this point is trying to figure out whether this guy has changed, and it's like this this is a lot more fascinating when you watch it the second time. And he's like, so let's just pretend the war doesn't bother us. She's like, I'll put on a Starfleet face. It's a good face. I like Mbinga, man.
I don't know. I mean, second time through, you wonder, does Mbinga... What is Mbinga's game here? Because he already knows that he's a liar. He doesn't lie to his face until they do that judo match or whatever.
Well, he knows he's a liar and a fraud. He already knows that from the beginning of the episode. But what he doesn't know is if this guy has turned a brand new leaf and is trying to make the best of a bad situation.
Now, but I think it's my opinion, I think he is.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And so by the end of this episode, I'm not sure why Mbinga decides that he needs to kill this guy, other than he's just traumatized by the event, he hates the man, and he wants him to pay for
what
he did.
Do we want to talk about that now, or when we get to that point in the episode?
Because it's the most fascinating. We can talk about it then. Yeah. I was just wondering, like, when...
No, you're right.
You said that he's here to determine whether he's actually changed. I don't think that's true, because nothing about what he learns over the course of this episode would change that opinion one way or another.
That's the tragedy.
So he's lying to himself. If you're saying he's here to see if the man's changed, I think he's lying to Ortegas here. I don't think he's here for that. I think he's here almost as a test for himself.
Yes, I think there's a gap between the man he wants to be and the man that he is, unfortunately.
For sure.
And he, like I said, we'll talk about that in the climactic. But this is the thing that second time through, I was like, okay, this was rad, but what the fuck? Yeah, like why wasn't Binga doing this? What was he trying to do if he knew it the whole time? Mm-hmm. And I think I got a good answer, but we'll see.
And this is kind of a theme that Star Trek Strange New Worlds has been hitting on for a while now, right? They did a last episode with Boimler. They had Pelia tell him, just fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of that same thing, right? If you just pretend to be something long enough and you become it. It's definitely... I don't know if that's like a thesis they're going for in this show, but they're harping on that kind of continuously. So we go to the dinner where Spock detects Chapel's unease and offers her a sympathetic ear, but she slams the door shut on that offer. Just wishes Ra would shut the hell up about his conquests of peace. So Spock walks over to him and asks about the art of war and its Klingon counterpart. And Mbinga pours himself and Chapel a drink as Chapel questions why they're here. And Mbinga's super chill now, surprisingly, considering like the mere sight of Ra earlier caused his heart to nearly explode, literally.
Yeah, I wondered about this. I was kind of maybe wondering if it would make more sense if he had hyposprayed himself. Like that.
I was gonna say, is he on the red or the blue right now? Because I think the blue is probably what chills you out.
But also, he spent a lot of time. I think he's the thing is like I think that Mbinga has spent a lot of time trying to get over, and he's got a wide range of coping skills. It's why he does the combat stuff with La'an. It's why, you know, he's the first one to be able to give. I think it's interesting that he's the one that gave Spock advice on how he can suppress his, you know, human tendencies. Mm-hmm. You know, that this is a guy who has amassed a suite of personal techniques to try to get over his trauma and not make it everyone's problem. But it's not perfect, and it can be overwhelmed. But he shows a remarkable amount of control going here.
Yeah. I love Spock strolling over to fix this situation. He's like a shark in the water. And I thought he was going to do battle with the guy, but he's really just distracting him. I thought he was going to bring logic, level his logic guns at Ra here and really blow
him
away.
Don't make me burn your fingies again, Ra. Because I'll do it. That rack to Gino can get a hell of a lot hotter.
Oh, yeah. This Mel Parmakosh, I don't know what this is. The Klingon Art of War is impossible to search. I don't know if it's a thing that exists.
You'd have to know its exact spelling, number one. But.
Exactly, and I have no idea because we don't have subtitles.
It wouldn't surprise me if it's something like the Rules of Acquisition, where some Klingon at some point has thrown, you know, like a little bon mot from it. But like, yeah, I
was just trying to see if it had already been in Star Trek, but
yeah,
couldn't search it.
What do you think about the Spock in the chapel? This relationship is aging like milk.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going down the tubes faster than his last one. Mostly probably the proximity, right?
It's like, a bit, but he's also trying too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. He's always in here,
and
like, I see you're under distress. I'm here for you. This is all understandable. Like, he's just, yeah. And I don't know, maybe Chapel's just not ready. She's got a lot of her own demons she's got to fix. But, like, it seems like the more that Spock wants to kind of, like, reassure and comfort her, the more she's like, oh, God, get the fuck out of my face.
Yeah. We're going to see that a little bit more here in another scene. But yeah,
maybe Tess Chapel's like day. She's just a homewrecker. Now that she's now she's broken up the engagement, she's like, this isn't even hot anymore.
Yeah. Can she go after Pike and his fling? I don't know what she is. Captain
True.
Yeah, she can bust it that up too, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Easy. Yeah. She's gotta find the next happy couple and bust them up.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of people coupled up though.
No, not a ton. I think that's the last on the ship, right?
Yeah, Pike and his jag squeeze. That sounds like a slang term, but it's I promise it's not.
Everybody else is single, seems.
Yeah. Yeah. Single and ready to mingle. I don't know. I feel like we could use a season three of just like no relationship bullshit. We've had a lot of relationship bullshit in the first few seasons of Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
But it's also surprising that nobody on the ship is as horny as Spock. That's a little surprising too, you know? Kind of feel like they needed to spread some of that love literally around the crew.
Yeah. Captain Patel is who Pike is on and off with.
Yeah. Bust them up.
I want to go right to it, the Spock and Chapel thing. Did Spock, because the second time I noticed, like, it seems like what's bothering her is that he is pretending to not be a bloodthirsty. He's talking about everything but war, and like Spock deliberately got him to talk about war as a way to make Chapel feel better. But clearly, you know, like that's a little literal. You know, I think that like there's nothing this guy could say, and it seems like it's even a little bit more triggering when he starts talking about, you know,
sure,
Klingon's idea of war and, you know, him.
But there
about
is
his...
some. I get Chapel's feeling here. There's something offensive about the Butcher of J'Gaal, you know, going on about all his storied history with peace. It's absurd, right? But I mean, all this is in service of answering the question: has this man changed, or is he pretending? Is he a spy? So it all works really well. It makes a lot of sense. But we get a flashback to Mbenga demonstrating his bedside manner with the kid that they saved by squeezing his heart. An Andorian approaches him and asks him to use his murdering hands to sneak behind the lines and take out Ra. And when that doesn't work, he asks Mbenga to at least make him some his team some Protocol 12, which is the green shit. And he refuses.
You know, I thought they were talking about Protocol 12 the whole time. He was literally trying to recruit Mbenga onto his squad.
I think so at the beginning of this scene. Either way.
You might be right. You might be right.
Because clearly, I get the impression he's like some commando, right? Like he's some special ops guy who, because he talks about all the people he's murdered. He says, "You kill real good, dude."
Yeah. So he is. Yeah, he is like I feel like notorious within at least the special ops community of Starfleet, however fucking large that is. But
this is one grizzled Andorian too. I don't know that I've ever seen an Andorian this fucked up. He's got that the classic scar through his eye and the milky white.
Yeah, very cool. I want to see an Andorian with like half an antenna.
Yeah.
Always can in the canon they say that those are extremely sensitive, and like there's like in the novelizations there's lots of guys that like start a fight with an Andorian by punching him in the antenna, which always seemed I can't think of a single time I've seen Captain Kirk open with like I'm gonna shoot him right in his balls. Well, I guess Star Trek 6, but that was unintentional. But like, yeah, I'm gonna start the fight dirty. But it's like, yeah, Andorians
it's
just fucking
go for
it. It's a great
way to start a fight, man.
Also, what are you doing with your like fucking testicle equivalents on your forehead, man?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're just gonna
have a no punch in the face rule kind of shit? Is that?
And you're waving them in people's faces. Come on,
you wanting to get your antenna smacked? I liked Mbinga's relationship with this the young soldier.
Uh-huh.
What did he mean by the Dakra wouldn't let me die?
Couldn't tell.
Were they trying to describe that his injuries are a result of torture?
Oh.
Because they mentioned that later, that he is. But I'm like, what the fuck was he doing that would put your inside organs on your outside?
But you don't want to know.
Yeah. But that's what he said. He says, I don't have subtitles. I tried to piece out what he's saying, but I thought he said Docker just wouldn't let me die to kind of explain like the severity of his injuries.
Can you imagine the torture you could do with transporters?
Dude, I was just
lock onto
that.
Their insides. Like what brings your insides outside faster than a transporter?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to give you a transporter.
Transporterectomy.
Fucking.
Go in there and.
Ugh. Commander Cronenberg coming up with that torture protocol.
All right, let's go back to present day, back to the dinner. Ra is telling more stories. He claims that Jakal changed him, and Mbenga and Chapel agree on that front. Changed them all. Ortegas brings up the battle cry of the Klingons. Ra says, I'm trying to make up for my past. Ortegas, is pretty pissed off. She leaves. Chapel goes after her. And Mbenga's on the edge, so Pike tells him, you know what? You should go check on Erica, too. And when he gets up to leave, Ra grabs his arm, and then asks to be included in Lon's next Mukbara? Full impact Mukbara session? Is this a sexual proposition? I wasn't quite sure at the beginning.
But they also said the Mukbara judo. It was like a modified form of judo, so I don't know if that's like
later
a Karen
we find
version
that out.
Or if it's
here. I thought it was just asking for a threesome, which would have been weird.
Yeah, he put his hand on his arm. It's like Mbenga's like, I can give you a demonstration right now. Wapa! See how you're on the ground looking up at this bulkhead.
Really had to steady himself when he did that. It was a really good bit of acting there. The way he kind of like resist physically flinching away.
Another really nice transition as the camera's kind of moving sideways out of the conversation with the Andorian Special Forces guy in Mbenga. There's like this like a broken piece of archway that smoothly transfers into the smooth kind of archways that are, you know, flanking Pike's quarters. And camera slides past that pillar and Ra holding court. It's some nice camera work. Some grace notes I haven't seen on the show often. Although, like I said, we talk about the show being pretty, but like, they're doing some interesting stuff.
For sure.
And I don't know. Again, Mbenga's trying to figure out like why he shifted, you know, why his ideals changed. And okay. his, like, I just want to connect with others that need healing. But I don't know. I don't know why Pike tolerates Ortegas, like, storming out. I don't know why he's inviting his junior officers to this important thing if they're going to just act a fool, especially since they acted a fool just an hour before.
Uh-huh.
But then Pike, yeah, I think that getting Mbinga and Chapel out of there is like a nod to like, oh, maybe I've pushed too far, and Unichin Riley is going to be there to reinforce that lesson here in a bit.
Yeah. We're going to flash back to Jigal before that. The kid that they saved wonders what all this is for, fighting and dying, and Mbinga tells him it's for everything good about the Federation and so that the people they love can have a chance to live in peace. That's Starfleet, baby.
Why are we fighting, Doc? What are we doing here? I thought it was interesting that Moon Boy here, because he says he's from the Terra Luna, which we just call the moon. Mm-hmm. It looks like he's wearing the motion picture era pajama uniforms. Like, this little surgical cloak he's wearing looks exactly like the uniforms that they're wearing in the Star Trek The Motion Picture. And I wonder... I can't imagine, like, what they're going with this. Like, yeah, you got this essentially a hospital gown that we're going to adapt into a Starfleet uniform in, like, 10, 15 years. Yeah, because that's the time frame we're looking at here.
Mm-hmm.
But I like this, that, you know, like, we... Sometimes you have to fight to keep bigger tragedies from happening. And the only thing you can do is remember most what you loved about home and try to hold on to that and hope you don't come back different. But ultimately, we're fighting so that other people we love can live in peace. And that's, like you said, that's Starfleet, baby.
It's not just Starfleet, you know, it connects to our current
culture.
That's
the way the warp core breaches sometimes.
That's the way probably a lot of veterans feel, you know. They fought, they paid a price, and
yeah.
Was it worth it? You hope so.
100%.
There's a commercial break here. We're still in the past when we come back from commercial, where Lieutenant Trask, Special Forces, has decided that the troops from Tent City are going to go on a suicide run to try and get Ra. And this kid is proud to go after Mbinga's speech about what they're fighting for. He was maybe too convincing, because, Mbinga's not super happy about it.
Well, because, like, these troops are being deliberately sacrificed to give the strike team, the distract Ra, so the strike team can go in and assassinate him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a legitimate military tactic. Like, sure. Doing feints and having troops that are going to sacrifice themselves to achieve a larger objective. Like, it's not... No one's wrong here. Like, Mbinga, like, I understand why he's like... He just saved this young kid. And he's taking a shine to him. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's got to be especially... You know, if you're a doctor in a military setting, I don't even know how you do it. Because, like, it's got to be extremely frustrating to spend all of your time and talents fixing up people and then... You know, there's just more being minted every day. And sometimes the people that you patch up and get back into the fight are going to get, you know, killed later on. So I see it from my blog, but also, kudos for this guy I guess this is a testament to Federation military discipline, that even in these bad situations, their soldiers will still effectively follow their orders.
And a testament to the ability of Mbinga to deliver a message, right? I mean, because the kid was questioning, like, what am I doing? Why am I fighting? This is stupid. And then Mbinga had this talk, and he's the one who put him back in the firing line, essentially.
Yeah, and I wonder, because you said that, like, Mbinga almost did a too good of a job, because I think what really gave him pause is when the kid seemed like he was disturbed that he had this moment of weakness. Like, he wanted to deny it. It's like, oh, don't worry about me, Doc. That was just a drugs talking. I'm ready to do my duty. Like, that, like, almost Mbinga shamed him into doing his duty, and that now Mbinga feels like, oh fuck, I did this.
I got this kid killed. Yeah,
I just gave this guy a pep talk that I thought was going to, you know, give him a reason to live, and now it's giving him a reason to die. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how it goes.
Stay low, fight hard. What do you do?
Let's go back to present day, where Spock apologizes for the dinner, but Chapel says, yeah, he's not responsible. He just wants to help, but it's making things worse, I guess because of his logical brain. I don't know. She asks for some personal time away from him, which it's not just away from him. I feel like it's away from everybody, but mostly him.
And as soon as they is this what a human would call being on a break? He just sprints to La'an's quarters and passionately kisses her. Just like that's all he knows. Mm-hmm. On to the next one.
And she says, I got a thing for Kirk. Can't help you, buddy.
True. Then he ran to Uhura. Then he ran to he's just gotta finally he finds solace in the Pella's
arms. God. My God. Someone get this man a holodeck. He's too horny for this time period.
Hey, if you don't think 2,400-year-old Pella can't fucking teach you a thing or two, I'm sorry. I would do it just for the fucking story.
What's in it for Pella at that point?
Let alone the experience. Right? She wants to give some kid a lesson. I'll take it.
Sure. I guess she could do some charity work. Why not? Oh boy.
She's been fucking around on Earth since the Greco-Roman days, man. That's some wild shit.
She was in on the Caligula stuff for sure.
Yeah, she got weird.
She was in that room, that chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Tin City is under attack back in the past again. In order to evacuate, they need to purge the transporter buffer, but the wounded guy's pattern is still in there. Chapel hesitates, but Mbinga is there to press the button with his meaty, murderous hands, saving more lives than he purges, though. So, one buffer out, five buffers in. That's pretty good trade.
Yeah, and the when I watched this the second time, this was extra poignant because, like, he metaphorically pushed a button on that little the young soldier, and now it's like, and it's still like
direct, but.
It's more direct, but also it's like it's a little bit more matter of fact, and he's helping Christy because obviously she's not comfortable with this kind of. She's just here, you know, just got reassigned. I thought this was a really strong scene that he's just like, you know, he's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "We're saving lives."
Yeah,
this guy's cluttering up our transporter.
Uh huh. Yeah, we can either keep this one guy in transporter and hope to save him, or we can get, you know, 5, 6, 8. A dozen, 100 people out?
It'd be the Vietnam equivalent of a Huey just landing on a gurney, though. Like, wow, we can't get him off the landing pad. Well, there's six wounded grunts in there, soldier. Skids land right on him.
Jesus. Yeah. Let's go to present day again. Where Mbinga and Ross bar, literally, they're doing judo, while they try and find a way to become allies. Ra asks Mbinga to join him for his next peace conference. Mbinga asks if all the stories of him killing his own men are true, and he confirms them, but claims it's because they committed atrocities against the civilians. And Ra tries to find common ground in the way that they were both changed by war.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the key scenes of the show where, like, what I understand is Mbinga is really trying to get to the bottom of whether this guy has reformed or not, whether he is genuinely appalled by the atrocities that he ordered, whether he's really doing it for the nameless dead, whether he stood for what's right and called, but I think... The thing is this scene, I felt like this guy is an opportunist, that he saw the writing on the wall, that the Klingons were not going to win this war, and that he tried to do like, you know, the guy at the end of Inglourious Basterds, where he tries to cut a deal, and this is the deal
he says as much later in the episode, right? Like, I'm leaning into this image that they have of me because that's how I get my out in an empire that no longer respected me, that would... no longer have me.
But he's also getting results. Like,
in what
you know,
way?
Like, and like, I mean, the Federation, whether he's being used as a prop or not, the Federation is getting peace deals and is rapidly, you know, brought the hostilities to conclusion, and then all the mop up issues. Like, he is instrumental in having that, and making that happen. And maybe only a guy with his reputation could. And he doesn't know that, mm-hmm. you know, like, he doesn't know that Mbinga is over here stewing over this whole thing. But right. It's interesting because, like, I at this point, I thought that he is an intentional fraud, and he is just, you know, trying to do what he needs to do to avoid swinging from the gallows or whatever the 23rd century equivalent of that at the Hague.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably still at the Hague. That'd be funny.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not?
And there's definitely a gray area, right? I mean, you can be both. You can be the coward who was no longer accepted among your own people and ran to the open arms of the enemy and defected, and also the guy who's doing a lot of great work to bring about peace after this war.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's a solid, bright line of a distinction to be made here. You can be an opportunist and still do good things. They're not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, but you can also see how, like, Mbinga would feel a certain way about one versus the other, too.
Oh,
because, yeah. Like, that's what I said. I feel this whole episode, Mbinga's looking for a reason why he can let this go, why he can put this stuff behind him.
Yeah, I'm not... Okay, we'll save it until the end of this episode, but I'm not quite sure what Mbinga's doing over the course of this episode, other than trying to be the man he wants to be, trying to fake it until he makes it.
I can agree with that.
Failing, like, I guess,
total,
at the end.
Total agreement with that, yeah.
Failing, but being okay with it, too? Yeah, we'll talk about it. Anyway, you know, they fight for a while, then Mbinga goes and showers and flashes back to all the civilian casualties on Jigal. He sees the kid lying dead and decides he's had enough. He picks up a knife, determined to go after Ra. We'll kind of get to more of that here in a second. So I think we should move on to Lon giving Pike a faster course to Starbase 12 because she thinks the crew's on the edge. Sorry. Yep, it's Una. Una giving Pike a faster course to Starbase 12 because she thinks the crew's on the edge and they need to get Ra off the ship ASAP. Pike doesn't like how that feels on, like, a Federation level, but on a personal level for his crew, he understands it. So he orders the course change.
Yeah, Pike needs to swallow a bag of cement and get a little hard. Like, this, I think Una should have come in here and been like, I got a plan to get this guy to Starbase a day early so we don't kill each other. He should have been, oh, thank God. Not like, oh my God, what does this say about Starfleet? Like, dude.
Captain's problems, right?
Yeah.
Like, Una doesn't have to worry about the image of Starfleet nearly as much as the captain does.
Well, the image of Starfleet is not going to be helped by your chief ambassador to the Klingons being murdered by your chief medical officer, but...
This is true,
sure.
But at this point, it's only a possibility. It's not a foregone conclusion.
Yeah. But we'll get to that tragedy here in a bit.
Uh-huh. For sure. Yeah, there's a lot of good lines here too from Pike. He's making a strong case for why they shouldn't do this. I think, like, how can we represent a Federation that believes in peace but doesn't allow some people to make up for their past? Mm. I think, you know.
No, that's, man. That's
and Una. She says it's, you know, basically it's not fair to ask these people to let that go.
Dude,
Federation
it's
or no, people are on their own journeys, right?
Even without trauma, or like obvious trauma, I've noticed there's a lot of people who'll be the first to talk about restorative justice and like it's a shame that we don't do more rehabilitative justice, and then, you know, a crime that happens that they care about or know about, and then it's like, oh, we're gonna lock him up and throw away the key, or this guy's disgusting, they get the death penalty, death too. It's like, well, what the fuck? You know, like, we, the same person contains multitudes, right?
Personally, when I see some crimes that people have committed, I'm like, yeah, don't give them an opportunity. Punish them. They've done something they knew was wrong. Punish them. But at the same time, the non-lizard part of me really wants to say, I think anybody can be rehabilitated and they should be given that opportunity.
True. Yeah, and at the end of the day, that's exactly right. But we do have, like you said it great, the lizard brain part. You know, you always have that conflict between
that emotional.
I know
reaction.
This is what's best long term for society, but I know it would feel real fucking good right now.
Uh huh.
And doubly historically, so. We don't do very good job the delayed gratification, especially when it comes definitely to things not like revenge and justice and retribution.
Yeah, and when it's something as personal as what Mbenga has experienced, you understand it doubly so.
Yeah.
So we flash back to Mbenga mixing up a batch of Protocol 12 as he preps for his mission to kill Ra. Chapel realizes he's going on his own. He gives her a device to beam him out once he contacts her, and she tells him to save who he can and kill the bastard responsible. And he gives her a vial of Protocol 12 just in case.
So we learn in this sonic shower scene a few scenes back that apparently his Delta Force operator handle was Ghost.
Oh,
someone's like, you're the Ghost. Permission to call right. Mbenga the Ghost from now on.
The Ghost. Yeah.
I don't care. Even on the musical episode, I want the Ghost comes in to belt a happy song.
The Ghost tap dances across the bridge.
The Ghost. Right. The Ghost eats a roast beef sandwich at port forward or the port galley. Yeah. Uh-huh. No, I love it because it's too badass. I want to call him the Ghost from now on.
The Ghost. Love it. I got a question for you. Something weird that I noticed in this episode. What's with all the 12s? So it's Protocol 12. They're taking the ambassador to Starbase 12. And here you can see on this data pad, on Mbenga's personnel file, there is a tint that says Echo 12.
God
damn.
Does
Reiner just like the numbers 12?
That, I mean, it's okay. So it could just be a random chance. It's not beyond
certainly.
It's not beyond reasoning that the set producer, writer, and whatever can come up with these at the same time. It could be that it is like a significant number to the director, the head writer on this particular episode, mm-hmm. or most tantalizingly, they're playing something that's important to Mbenga.
How old was his daughter when she went into the buffer?
12 years old. He's got a rare form of polydactylism that gives him 12 fingers and toes.
Jesus.
He says...
Except all the extras are on his left foot.
His edge in combat is that he uses the base 12 system for counting. It's just It's so easily divisible. Oh my God.
By his left foot, yeah.
No, but I do. I guess we should keep our peepers looking out for 12s in the future, especially around Mbenga.
I guess so. It's just around the Ghost. It was just something I noticed that was a little strange.
Call of Duty Ghost Protocol 12.
Oh, they're on 12.
I actually would love. I kind of want to play a first person shooter as Mbenga as the Ghost. That'd be fucking cool.
Oh, dude.
A Star Trek combat. Like a gritty Star Trek combat game?
Oh, what is the name of it? So there are a couple of Star Trek games that have come out or are coming out soon that I'm super interested in. One of them is the Star Trek Resurgence, which is like a Telltale style, but in the vein of Star Trek, like where you're making moral decisions and all that stuff.
Oh, Telltale's a great vehicle to tell Star Trek story.
Yeah, there's one out, Resurgence, that is like that. Already. And then there's another one coming out that I don't remember the name of, like Star Trek Infinite or something, which is going to be, it's made by Paradox Interactive, which is the ones that do like Stellaris and like all those grand strategy games. They're going to be doing a Star Trek one. I'm super
excited.
Star Trek
strategy game sounds super exciting.
Yes. Cannot wait. It just says coming soon on Steam, so I don't know when it's going to be out, but keep an eye out for that.
Oh, by the way, if you do like Telltale style video games, I guess I'd be remiss to say that we are going to be playing. They got a new Expanse flavored one. I know there's probably a lot of crossover in the Expanse of Star Trek fandoms. And if not, there should be. Holy shit. Every Trekker should watch the Expanse and vice versa. Mm-hmm. But they got a drummer themed set of 5 episodes coming out. We're playing that on the day of the release, which are Thursdays. So the day that this drops, we will be doing a stream that night starting at 8 p.m. Central and every other Thursday night for the next... Yeah, sorry, Eastern. And every other Thursday night after that and for the next 5 every other Thursdays. So
yeah.
Best way to follow all that stuff is Twitter or any social media at Bald Move or Baldest Move if you're on TikTok. But Yeah, I would love to have people stop by and watch us live. And then if you missed the live, you can always see the recording on youtube.com/baldmove.
Mm-hmm.
Side promotion.
Yeah. All right, we go back to present day where Ra attempts to reach out to Mbenga. But Mbenga's holding the fact that he gave the order to kill civilians against him, rightfully so, I think. Ra claims he's trying to make up for it. Turns out that Mbenga chased Ra off of Jigal, so he knows that Ra was lying earlier when he said that he killed the ones who committed atrocities against civilians.
Who was the fiercest fighter?
Yep, yep. And Ra just, he admits that he just kind of leaned into this image as the butcher to get Starfleet to trust him, and claims that his work justifies everything he did, his piecework. Mbenga gets pissed and puts a knife through his heart just as Chapel walks in. This is a really poignant scene. This is the best scene of the episode, right? Are we in agreement there?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Mbenga is like... his own look inside and realizing that he is the butcher of Jigal...
Mm-hmm.
In more ways than one, right? Like, he's the guy who actually did the deed that everybody is calling him the Butcher of Jigal for, but also it changed him and turned him into that guy.
Yeah, this guy's like, it's like stolen valor, or I guess stolen infamy.
Uh-huh.
And that line, it's like, you're using the blood on my hands to make you into a saint. And I think, so like, my take on this and why I said it's a tragedy is I think that Ra... has changed for the better, that like he has faked it till he made it, because he could have kept doing this if he just stops and walks away from Mbenga, but him like, let me help you understand, let me help you heal,
mm-hmm.
like it did feel like a genuine calling, and Mbenga couldn't take it, like he was forced to kill him because he couldn't contain his, like, you know, the monster that this guy created. And
he
realizes
that he's getting away with it, right? Like, this is so personally affecting to Mbenga that I think he thinks, like, this guy is turning over a new leaf, everybody's buying it, and he hasn't paid the price yet.
Mm-hmm.
I need to make him pay now. It's the only opportunity.
Yeah.
And so I look at this and I'm like, well, he knew this all along, right? If he was in the room and he's the one who did the butchering, he knew all along that this was a big lie. He's not the butcher of Jigal. But he knew he was there, and he knew he needed to pay. And so everything else in this episode is more a test of, am I actually going to do this thing? Am I going to let him change me, I guess? Let my experiences so change me that I become someone I don't want to be? I think by the end of it, the answer is yes.
Or that in this peak spirit, it shows like if this guy just backed off, I think, you know, it's like it took two to tango.
Sure,
but it's like
sure.
The Klingon is coming out of a sense that I do have a calling. I do have a mission.
Yeah, and this is why I say I feel like Mbenga thinks he's getting away with it. Because he's changing. And maybe there's nothing to get away with, right? Like the guy's doing the best thing he can do given the situation. Ra is,
yeah, like this is the Federation.
But
this would be the Federation way.
To Mbenga.
This would be the Federation. It's also ironic, mm-hmm. because like Ra is embodying like what the Federation would probably tell you to do if you're in a bad situation. But I don't know. There's a lot of self-serving stuff in that too, because
yes,
you know, he did order the death of all these people. He is like not just mm-hmm. used Mbenga's bloodshed, but he's also said that his personal orders were the work of his underlings. And I think there's something there, too, that you have to understand, that Mbenga respected the guys that he fought in a way that he can't respect Ra, because Ra ran away. Like, these guys bought him his Mbenga would have killed these guys had it not been for the valiancy of him. And then for him to use those men to shield him from his own atrocities, escape, like, oh, I tried to do the right thing, but these guys are just, you know, they're too Klingon first, and now he's running around making it like this is like a person, like these are just personal flaws that Klingons have, they just can't handle, that our culture is worthless and we're just a bunch of warlike. I like I said, it's a bunch of interesting nuanced work.
You know, it's not like he's come clean with everyone and said, I'm actually not the butcher of Jigal, but I did order the civilian deaths. he's still saying, he's still claiming that reputation and effectively saying that he's innocent.
Yeah. Well, and now the other tragedy is Mbinga now is going to be the one forced to carry forth a lie.
Yes.
But he's also probably not going to get a bunch of peace treaties signed either. So it's like,
no. But he might Federation, save a lot of people, you know?
But he would have done that without killing this guy. What I'm saying is, like, the Federation is worse off. Mbinga is worse off. Nothing's better.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure Mbinga feels personally like he's failed himself, and he's failed his captain, and he's failed Starfleet. So it's like, that's not good either. At some point, like, now he's got a new arc that's a hell of a lot more interesting than how can I save my daughter from an unknown disease. It's like, how can I forgive myself?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if they're going to... Because the thing is his daughter's still out there living at Nebula. It would be a nice little bookend for his thing for him to go back and have a talk with, like, you know... Like, I was faking it till I made it being your dad. And I, like, I had all this stuff inside that I didn't let you and your mom or whatever. Like, that'd be kind of a sweet little scene, too, to kind of put all this, you know. We thought we knew what his arc was. And we had this other whole arc and then come back and check back in on his daughter.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be very interesting.
Were they doing... So, like, they had this whole element where they film all this through this frosted window of sickbay, the privacy glass. And Chapel... saw what we saw, which is very ambiguous. Are they actually playing with what actually happened? Because to me, Mbinga just stabbed this guy because he made this guy shut up. You need to shut the fuck up right now. Mbinga and Chapel are saying that this guy came at Mbinga with a knife because he was infuriated to have this accusation of traitor, you know, of butcher handed to him.
I think unambiguously Mbinga is lying. It's a 100%. Little more up in the air on Chapel. It kind of depends on what she saw, like when she walked in that room exactly.
Well, but it's no doubt in my mind that Chapel, even if she lies if she's required to. She's not going to let Mbinga go down
and
for killing this guy.
It was my feeling that she was lying knowingly in that scene.
Me too.
Based on when she walked in and stuff like that, but it's a gray line.
What I think is the other great thing this episode did is I'm pretty sure Pike knows that everyone's lying.
Yeah.
Because they made a whole point. It's like, so he attacked you because he flew into a rage when you accused him of doing these atrocities. But we've seen like three different people accuse him of atrocities to his fucking face, and he handled it like a champ. So I think you're supposed to understand that Pike understands that this is bullshit. But he also knows it's bullshit that's probably going to fly to this inquiry. And what the hell? What's Pike going to start confining people to their quarters now? But like, I think that's the other tragedy is that everyone kind of knows that this is a bullshit deal. But what is saying is it going to actually improve the situation if you say something?
I'm trying to decipher how much Pike knows about Mbinga's history here, because obviously Chapel knows. Is he in on this stuff? Like, does he have that knowledge of how personally
I don't think he knows about the ghost.
Because he's acting kind of like he does. Because if he's willing to... Look, he knows that Mbinga's lying, I think. You're right about that. But he's also willing to give him a pass and kind of vouch for him here with Starfleet. And I don't know if that's based on solely on their... you know, existing relationship is his captain and chief medical officer. Well, he's not even the chief medical officer. Captain and a medical officer, right? Isn't Chapel?
Chapel's the head nurse. Mbinga's the chief medical officer.
Oh, yeah, you're right. How did that happen?
What do you mean?
I mean,
sometime between Jagal
Chapel
and
just
this,
slacked
he's,
off, I guess.
They're two separate tracks. Like, I don't think a nurse, it's like commissioned officers versus non-com. It's like, you can't be a sergeant long enough until you become a captain. You just can't. Like, I don't think you can nurse long enough to become a doctor. You'd have to stop nursing, go back to medical school, get your, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I get there's like nurse practitioners and there's a lot of like side area, and you can go pretty fucking high in the sergeantcy of lots of different branches of the military.
It's the reason that everybody outranked Chief O'Brien. Yeah. Like, literally, Nog outranked him.
Yeah, because he's like one of the few non-commissioned officers in fucking Starfleet.
Anyway, the the point there was like, I'm not sure if he knows about his history or doesn't, but it seems like he doesn't, but he's still willing to vouch for him as like captain and chief medical officer, right?
Yeah, and I will observe that, like, if the people closest to you in your life don't understand your situation, there's almost no one to blame but yourself. Like, it seems like another thing that Mbinga needs to do is start talking to his friends and his family about the shit that's really going on. Like, he's got, clearly he thinks he's a monster and he's keeping this from people, right? Mm-hmm. And at some point he's going to have to heal, he's going to have to let that out and start leveling with people so that, you know, he can't pull this like, well, you weren't there, you can't possibly know. I mean, you're right, they're never going to know, but they can understand a hell of a lot more than they're doing if you give him a chance.
And Chapel's the one that he's comfortable talking about it with the most, because obviously she was there and kind of,
yeah, he doesn't have to share,
feels
she
a kinship with her.
Yeah she gets it,
and it makes sense that she'd be the one to lie for him if in fact she's lying. But we didn't really like introduce this scene, but yeah, Chapel reports what she saw to Pike and Lon, but she, I think, lies about it, saying the Ra attacked Mbinga. She sells the story by pointing to the fact that the blade that killed him had the Jagal warlord's blood on it, so it obviously must belong to the Butcher of Jagal, which,
but that's a great, that's a nice, right? That's so nice, that's so satisfying with like, well, it had to be the Butcher's blade, so...
I wasn't entirely sold on this episode until these last few scenes, and I was like, this came together so freaking well.
Yeah,
all the pieces just locked into place at the end. And that's also one of the aspects of it, that blade.
Not in like a morally definitive way, because there's still lots of open questions, but like the plot itself, yeah, really clicks with a satisfying, like, you know.
For sure. Pike is just stunned by all this.
Well, and also like Pike's right. He's like, you know, he's like, and it's funny, it's like when he says he was living a lie, I saw his true face, the ghost is talking about himself, right? Which I thought was great. And he's like, well, what if he murdered children? And I start, because he's like, that's the other thing, is like, I think that Pike and him know that they're kind of talking around the issue, because he's essentially telling his friend like, what if I did murder this guy? Not because of anything he did, but because of things he did before. And he needs to, you know, he needs justice. What then? And Pike's like, well, that's why we have due process. That's why we have tribunals.
And where's the line? Like, what atrocities could he commit? How fresh could they be and me be justified in that action?
And he also, like, to that, he says, well, the diplomatic corps knew who this guy was and still let him represent the Federation and made use of him. So it's like, you can't trust, like, yeah, it's kind of rebukeable. You can't even trust the official channels to give you justice. And what about, yeah, what about the victims? What about the sense of justice? What are they? And the Pike, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, it's, who gets to decide that? Who gets to decide who gets to pay? Who has to pay the price and who gets the chance of redemption?
Absolutely.
And that line of like, you have the privilege of believing what's best in people, whereas I know that there's some things in life that don't deserve forgiveness. And again, I think the ghost talked about himself. Like, I think he thinks that he's kind of like beyond redemption, that he's permanently broken again. And if you don't believe that, you end with the great motif of him getting biobed working again, but some things break in a way that can't be fully repaired, only managed.
And then at the very end, before the credits roll, the biobed blinks again and it's broken.
Yeah. Yes. fucking A plus.
Yeah, this whole episode is probably the best episode of the season by a mile, I'd say. Not the others are bad. The others
that's
are
the thing.
Very
yeah,
much
not
fun
taken
and good,
away.
But this is kind of the next level stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, really loved it.
Good track. Goes down easy. Shall we get the feedback?
There's one other thing he says here that he says, I didn't start the fight. Which, when he says that, what he's talking about is what happened on Jagal. He's not talking about what happened in the medical bay. Right? Because he did start the fight there, but the fight was started years ago by Jagal being the Butcher of Jagal. Or, you know, not being the Butcher of Jagal, but leading into it and ordering the
deaths of
civilians.
And if you want to go back, to, you know, keep going back, like the conditions that led to the Kling, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like, no, you know, who started this shit? Cain? I think it's Cain.
Yeah,
I think Cain. He murders brother, and we've been doing it ever since. But
canonically,
but yeah. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense too. The ghost again talking about himself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now we can get to the feedback.
Feedback, send it to StarTrek@BaldMove.com. Let's open up. Shields up, here come the ads.
Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character Furiosa, starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis. Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. At ease, Ensigns. Welcome back to Bald to Go.
Let's open our hailing frequencies, see what we got here. Michael's up first. It says, can someone please explain why Pike blew up the Federation gas station at the end of the episode? Since we had the surprise episode, this is like,
hey man,
a smorgasbord of the last three episodes worth, okay?
I'm there with you. You just bash a console or something. I've seen it done many times. You don't have to blow up the entire facility.
You bash one console, plasma gets everywhere. It's the same thing. Uhura has been hallucinating since the cold open. Red shirt guy has brain damage to the point he's sabotaging the mining equipment. So when Uhura runs to the bridge yelling, blow up the gas station, the correct response should have been someone hypospray this woman and get her to sickbay. It's crazy to think the crew would follow her instructions. Although she did come up there with another crew person who wasn't crazy to back her up. Like,
and Pike trusts his crew. I mean, that's one of the things about Pike, right? He implicitly trusts his crew, unless they're making calls that are obviously insane. It's a big request, but I think he trusts her.
Yeah, agreed. It says also Pike's throwaway line of "We can't shut it off" was stupid. Are we supposed to believe that three crews of Starfleet engineers couldn't find off switch? How about closing the input manifold? Presses for shoutout earlier and I missed it. Pike blew up a $1 billion oil rig. Nuts. I mean, I think the whole, I guess there's a reason question about, like, if some intelligent being is being tortured and killed in a device of your construction and someone says turn it off and someone says I can't turn it off, how much time do you give Starfleet engineering to get over there? Like, how much more does those beings have to be torn? Because again, they're higher dimensional beings. They could do something like snap their fingers and make all of reality. You don't know. Like, there is a little bit of a ticking time bomb going on there, right?
I suppose so. It still seems crazy to me, but yeah.
Moving on to Craig from the UK says, I've been very happy with the quality of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and this season they're really hitting the strong points, which brings me into what I think is an interesting conundrum. When the series was announced after the introduction of season 2 of Disco, I was happy and I thought the trio of Pike, Spock, and Una would be the highlight of the show. But they've stacked it with so many great characters and compelling actors that I find myself both annoyed that I'm not spending more time with Pike, but happy that I'm with these other characters. Even Kirk, which seems on paper would be a distraction, is handled expertly. I just hope that this show runs for 5 or 6 seasons so I can get my fill of all of them. Do you think they're getting the balance right so far? Is it a problem? It's a nice problem to have for sure. I agree. It's having a ton of great characters, an embarrassment of riches, is awesome. And I've seen other shows with our 10-episode formats. Yeah, I'm thinking Game of Thrones until it didn't, you know, be able to juggle a cast that large and compelling. For All Mankind's another good example. The Expanse is another good example. So you can definitely do it.
Yeah, my only real gripe with this season, as far as character balance, has been Spock. And it's not just this season, it's the entire series. I think they're a little Spock heavy.
Well, and he is by far the most popular character that they could possibly do anything with, right?
Yeah, obviously. But the shame of it, like I discussed last episode, is it's also a little one note for his character. Like, if it was Spock heavy and they were doing a whole bunch of interesting things with him, I'd be down. But it seems all to be focused on the emotion around his love life, and I'm not super interested in that.
Yeah.
So that's the only problem.
What do you think, 5 or 6? So the only thing I think stops this show is if Paramount Plus collapses, which is a possibility. Sure. All of these streaming services, but except maybe Max and Apple, are running at a loss. And like, Apple does have the war chest to run losses like that, but like, the others are running off, you know, essentially startup money and founder money, and they just don't. So if we have a big...
Is there another possibility here with this strike? Everybody's out of work right now.
Mm-hmm.
When the strike is off, when they reach a deal, all work is going to be back on, and there's going to be a huge backlog of things that like they're looking to cast for. Is it possible that some of these actors are moving on to bigger, better things after this strike is over?
Not unless they get,
because they'll be given the opportunities.
Europe. Because that's the thing. Like, I don't think so.
Well, once the floodgates open again, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, there will be so much stuff that needs to be casted for, right?
So I think the real concern is if the strike lasts long enough that there's some kind of force majeure contract. Because, like, most of these people in Strange Worlds are still very much under contract. Probably will be for a few more seasons. Mm. But, like, and I don't think those contracts just evaporate because there's a strike. But I'm sure that if they're, you know, if for whatever reason production shuts down for more than X amount of days, months, weeks, that's probably in the contract, you know, because Hollywood's been around a long time. This shit's happened.
You can't keep, like, someone under contract indefinitely if they decide not to do a season 3.
You can't
right?
just like, well, like, we're not going to make Star Trek Strange New Worlds for 10 more seasons. So Anson Mount, get fucked if you want to try to do any other project. Right. So I don't
think
so. What
if Anson Mount is offered like Marvel money to go star in the next Marvel movie that's shooting for 16 weeks and they can't Trek in the meantime?
I never know that, because I've seen that a ton of times where it's like, oh, we're shooting around this guy's schedule because he's got, so there must be some kind of like pecking order where if you get,
it can be done.
Yeah. And you know, you try to work around, do both, but I don't think you can just like get out of one in favor of the other. But I'm
also
more worried
like,
about
if all
the strike.
Those contracts expire, if some clauses hit, and then I don't know. Yeah. It's because it's going to be weird with like everybody trying to cast actors all at once, because usually it's like, well, we've got a movie role coming up and, you know, you're mid-season on this shoot, but you can take an audition and then go land it for the break. But
does that make sense, though? Because like, we've got, it's not like there's one end of the factory that's still running. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I feel like you're saying there's a giant vacuum of parts that are going to have to be filled. But
well,
like,
every TV show, think of like all the TV shows that would have been spaced out over the next year or so with filming, they're all going to be wanting to film at the same time, right?
Are they? Because then it's like, because like, if you're smart on the going out the factory side, even if you do have a glut of things, you'd still want to like space those out because there's a limited amount of demand. Like, if you'd release everything that would have come out in 2023 in the first half of 2024 with all this stuff that would have come out in 2024, Like I, but the thing is like that's saying that the businesses are going to act smart, and that that doesn't necessarily always happen. Because if they're smart, I don't think the strike would be happening. They just pay what is a very small fraction of the revenue they're being asked to share from this stuff. They just paid to keep the billions of dollars being made, but they're not doing that because they want the whole fucking pie. So, but that's the thing. As a fan, I'm worried about is you already have a bunch of stress on a pretty weak streaming ecosystem. We're probably going to be in the next decade looking at tons of aggregation, like all these Paramount and Peacock and UPN and CW Plus, whatever. They're all going to like start forming like giant because they can't survive independently. And I wonder if this strike puts on enough stress on shows where, you know, they're already kind of like I feel like the even though that it's clearly a lot of money being spent on it, that like Strange New Worlds probably as bad as cheap as they can film it as they possibly can. You know, they're already filming it in Canada. They're already making use of like the volume and stuff like, so it's like if this stresses Paramount and it's parent company enough that they have to make deep cuts, but like, God damn, the Star Trek property's gotta be the last thing that they'd think to cut. Cause it's
you would think
the
so.
Best
it's synonymous
thing
with Paramount for me. Yeah. It's like,
and it's popping off. Like people, they got a lot of buzz with that last season Picard. They're getting a lot of love for the Strange New Worlds.
Mm-hmm. Disco.
It's funny because like
I was certainly
when we started Strange New Worlds, like the full coverage, I'm like, man, are we gonna look stupid? Because like, do I like this just because it's Star Trek? And but like, I'm hearing more and more from Star Trek, not just in feedback, but like in forums and stuff, that like people really do feel like this is return to form. So I would think you got to keep that because this could be movie potential. You know,
yeah,
they
decide to do movies with Star Trek. I know they're doing one.
Or what if they just smoothly go into a reboot of the old series?
They just
announced one, like keep Uhura, keep Spock,
another reboot of the old series. Jesus,
yeah, yeah, but do it serious, not like J.J. Abrams action movie style. Like just keep doing it in the maybe Strange New World just becomes Star Trek the old series. The early years, I don't know. It'd be cool. I think that'd be cool. I don't say no to that. One question: in a battle of hairdo, who wins, Pike or Boimler?
I'm Pike.
Are we talking about weirdest hair, or are we talking about hair that's going to get you places? Because Boimler might win the former, but Pike's crushing him in the latter. Chris DC, is it just me or does the actor who plays Jim Kirk look a lot like Jim Carrey? Every time he's on, I just can't help but think of the skit from the 90s show In Living Color where Jim Carrey plays Kirk in The Wrath of Farrakhan. Linked this episode. And it's been a while, but as soon as Jim Carrey started his shit up, I'm like, right, yes. And the thing is, he's right. This is a lot of Jim Carrey Shatner. And I'm not saying it's ruining it for me, but fuck you, Chris, for putting this into my head. I just issued a public apology to the man. I don't want to have to retract it. Come on. Also, are you ready to hear a genius fucking idea and something they got to get on? They got to get on.
Yeah, let's hear it.
If they bring Jim and Sam's dad on the show, it has to be William Shatner.
Yeah. Boy, they better do that soon. The man's
but how much? I don't even know if Shatner's got it in the tank. He might be like in bad shape because I don't.
He
think
does,
I've
man.
Seen him. But he's on social media like all the time.
He's still everywhere. He's got so many projects in the works. He was just on a Marc Maron interview, I guess.
For real? So he's got his fucking right mind and physically. Yes, make this happen. Oh my God, make this happen.
And maybe they teased it. Maybe that's what the saddle was about last episode.
Oh, it'd be so
famous
good.
Horse lover.
Yeah, it's like he's like, well, I'll come by on your stupid Star Trek show, but I have to be sitting in a saddle at all times. Say less, Billy. We got you.
He's gonna swing his leg over it. He's gonna say Shatner.
This what's funny is it's because it's just a saddle on a podium. They're gonna tell him it's gonna be a CGI horse. No, you'll be riding the horse. It's gonna look good, but no, he's just actually riding Pike's.
You think he'd stand for that? He'd say, give me the fucking horse. I'm not sitting
on
this.
No, he'd sit on a saddle for it.
CG. No, he wants the horse, man. Give him the whole horse or nothing.
You think Shatner's got that much suction? You think he's got that, he can call the shots?
Oh, yeah. He'd bring a horse from home.
True.
I brought my personal horse in.
Yeah, I got 12. I brought a whole fleet of them. See which one works best on camera for you, boys.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great idea. They should get on that. Drew, super enjoying Strange New Worlds. I think it's the best Star Trek since Voyager and Deep Space Nine. There's only two flaws I've identified. Pella. Like Jim, I find her character quite annoying. She felt shoehorned into the ship from the get-go this season, even though her complete disregard for cleanliness, regulations, and orders may come from a thousand years of maturing experience. It still smacks the same kind of punkish hubris of youth we got from Michael Burnham in Discovery Season 1, which I also did not care for. Kirk. I was very wary of all the recastings at first, but Peck has consistently impressed me as a proper send-up of Spock, as has Gooding with Uhura. Both have been fantastic, but Wesley? Just missing it. You can tell the writing is there for younger Kirk, but the portrayal at every point feels more like Jim Carrey's Mad TV Kirk in a proper attempt at portrayal.
All right.
I mean, he says maybe it's just Wesley's Carrey-ass jawline talking. There is a lot of the Wrath of Farrakhan in this performance. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I wish I didn't see it. But now, thanks to Drew and Chris, I'm seeing it. I don't think it's fatal. The thing is, I was touch and go on Kirk when I first saw him. The more I'm seeing him, the more I'm liking him.
Nice.
And I do think they're also trying to rein in some of the sexism from the early goings of Star Trek. Like, you know, Uhura wears a skirt, but she's wearing with full leggings, and Una Chin Riley's in us, but like, you know, they are consciously trying to profesh up Starfleet. And Kirk having a little bit of a sensitive side, he's not quite just an unrepentant womanizer, is a step
but
in the right
still
direction.
He still likes the ladies.
There's nothing wrong with liking women. There's nothing, it's just a womanizer. Yeah. There's a fine line between the playboy and the womanizer. There's not that fine of a line. It's a pretty big gulf. Not that hard to fall into that gutter, but yeah. Actually, not that hard not to be a fucking scumbag if you want to be a male slut, but we'll see if Kirk can put on a clinic here. Keith says, just finished listening to your discussion of Those Old Scientists, and I wanted to point out one of the meta jokes I really like that you might have missed. When Ransom from the Lower Deck says at the end that Una is the hottest first officer in Starfleet history, it's because Ransom is played by Jerry O'Connell, who is married to Rebecca Romijn, who plays Una in real life.
Nice. I didn't know he played Ransom.
I didn't know he played that either. I did know Jerry O'Connell had missed, but like, and I just thought it was just him being some meathead dude, being like, you know, like essentially betraying what they said. That's like, it's just a, and he's like, it's a hot. But that's super fucking cute. How cute is that?
The double layer. I love it. That's perfect.
Yeah. Like Aaron, I'm not a fan of Lower Decks, but I thought this episode worked pretty well. In fact, I was able to continue some of the Strange New World character arcs, made it much better than I expected. Strange New World crossover with Lower Decks.
All right.
That's a much easier crossover. You just have to get some dudes and some dudettes into a voice booth, but might be a way to get me into Lower Decks. I don't know. From an anonymous source, they said, regarding the animated titles at the start of Those Old Scientists, they didn't play it entirely straight as you suggest. They show the space creature sucking on one of the nacelles like they do at the Cerritos on the Lower Decks title sequence. I didn't even notice.
I missed that.
Because honestly, I probably watched the first 10 seconds of the title sequences and like, holy fuck, that looks so good. I almost thought, and then I started looking at my notes and...
Yeah, I was writing, my notes from the intro. How cool this animated title sequence is. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's cute. That's cute that they dirtied it up just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Alan says, I completely agree with Aaron. The original series is the best main crew characters. However, I never really took to the TNG crew at all, though I did end up liking Jean-Luc and Inner Light. Holy shit. You never warmed up to the TNG until the most boring episode in the whole fucking catalog, huh?
Boring, huh? It's not boring.
I need to watch Inner Light as an adult. I was really... You guys don't know, but like a couple years back, we started watching The Next Generation on Sci-Fi Sundays on our when Twitch rolled out the watch party feature. And we were like deep in starting season 4, I think. And they pulled the Star Trek library, probably because Star Trek Paramount Plus came out. And we were no longer able to do that. But I was excited because like that's one of those ones where I remember it got all the Emmy nominations. You got a lot of public notice, and as a kid, I'm like, this fucking blows. Why do I want to see
just have best of both worlds, and you're gonna nominate this shit?
flute playing bullshit. No, I so like guy, that's a hot take, and I probably wouldn't stand by it as an adult, but I haven't gotten around to see that again.
I've seen it as an adult, and I very much appreciated that episode.
Says I would take the Voyager crew over the Next Generation
now,
crew. Well,
now
you
it's
know,
crazy talk.
People confessing a lot of things this episode, and Binga's the ghost and the butcher Jabal, and Alan prefers Voyager to Star Trek the Next Generation.
All right.
Also adores Citizen Kane. There's plenty of old black and white movies that film buffs speak of and reverential tones that I find boring, but not that one. It's funny and fast paced, not to mention beautifully framed and acted. I mean, look, we just did a podcast on this earlier this year. I've got watched this freshly in a professional capacity. Everything you say is true, but also I don't expect people to get the charms of Citizen Kane because it is a very old film.
Well, I would say ask the public how many of you have seen Citizen Kane, and the vast majority of them will have not seen it.
Yeah, and you could give them a DVD, a Criterion Blu-ray, and be like, you should watch this. It's critically, culturally, aesthetically significant. And they'll be like, oh, thanks. And then they'll keep watching Strange New Worlds because it's like eating candy, and Citizen Kane tastes like eating green beans. So,
and if they did watch it, they'd probably like it. But
yes,
they just don't want to give it a chance because it's so freaking old.
I also, it's like one of those things where like, I doubt, you know, there's not probably a lot of 16-year-olds that are watching Citizen Kane still. I mean, you know, getting blown away by it. But like, if you're talking about the adult population, I agree. But like, that's my son. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, and I was the same way. Like, it was hard for me to get into a black and white film when I was a kid growing up. My for son's sure. like, he can sniff out 1970s film grain.
Yeah.
Like, he sees 5 seconds, like, Dad, is this an old movie? And I'm like, fuck, man, it's color. I think it was made after I was born. What do you, but he knows.
Mm-hmm.
He knows.
Well, show him Taxi Driver. Show him.
I think in his 20s is when I start introducing him to some of my favorite, like The Godfather, you know?
The Godfather. Sure. Show him some of the best cinema from the 70s. He'll probably change his tune.
We'll see.
It's what did
we'll
it for see. Me.
We'll see. Zach says, I was listening to the podcast and you were asking about archaeological medicine as a field of study. This actually exists on Earth. I listened to a Radiolab episode about two scientists who are working on recreating middle-age recipes for treating infections, and they work. It's an interesting episode in a branch of science. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like we all like to do herder leeches and plague doctors with their bird mask and incense, but like they did shit because it usually worked. Out of probably there might be only one thing out of the six things they're smearing on you that has any effect at all, but something in there is working. I don't know. They also drilled holes in people's heads randomly, and
does it work as effectively as the solutions we have today?
No,
is it an entirely different question? I think when you're dealing with alien civilizations, that's where you can start to say archaeological medicine could potentially have some real value. Yeah. To our modern understanding.
After watching Lost in Translation, I asked some questions about universal translators. Once they're implanted, how can you possibly learn to speak a new language? If I'm trying to learn Spanish but I have a universal translator, won't it all sound like English? How do people study languages in Star Trek? Is that an irony? I can never tell. How good is the translator in subtleties? If I say friend versus buddy or comrade... there are subtle differences in the word usage, and can people quote other languages? For example, if I were feeling fancy and said, oh, Jesus Christ, Alia Iacta Est, would everyone just hear the die is cast?
Cachet Lavier? Could you say that?
And waste my totally unjustified franciness?
Yeah. No, that's all good questions. So in my mind, what's happening here is that you are thinking of the language that you want to use. You're thinking of the words you want to say. And you're actually speaking the language of the person that you're talking to. Because they don't have universal translators, right? Like Andorians, well, they might because they're in Starfleet or they're in the Federation. But like Klingons, they don't have universal translators embedded in their skull. So how
do
they understand
that?
You, even if you can understand them? Well,
because I feel like everyone's got universal translators that... And I assume
everyone?
You can turn even the internal implant, you can turn it off with some kind of like muscle twitch or some kind of like tongue swirl pattern or blinking.
No pun
like,
intended. This is all headcanon. But
no, yeah, because the thing is the Universal Translator doesn't make sense, especially like I always thought it's fun when like Picard's with the Klingons and he's talking like the King's English and all of a sudden he throws in a Klingon word, you know. And it's like, so what happened there? Did the Universal Translator stop translating it because he knows that Picard's trying to flash out with Klingon?
But how do you order a Ractigino from the replicator?
Right, right.
Since that's a Klingon word.
It just, yeah, just translate the coffee and you just keep getting a cup of Joe, you know? The reality is, like, you're not supposed to think too hard about that. In fact, there's a whole section in this the Next Generation Technical Manual that says, like, yeah, the Universal Translator. There's this couple things. Like, Universal Translator and transporter technology only exist because it makes the writer's job easier.
Until, you know, it makes the writer's job harder and then they forget that it exists. Or they explain why it can't be used.
True. And that's like the thing is like every once in a while they there's not a lot of Lost in Translation types episodes, like, and they stand out, like Darmok. You know, Darmok, right, is a classic example. And they had to come up with like, oh, the whole thing about this is this translation is all about these idioms and they don't, you know, like the translator's not
translated,
that it doesn't have the proper context, it can't translate it, needs, so it's like they have to, but I actually think that's kind of cool. Because otherwise, I'd have to be watching a lot of dubbed Klingon with actors not able to speak Klingon correctly because it's a hard... It's just better. It's just better.
I agree.
That's it. StarTrekAboldMove.com is how you get in touch with us for feedback for this show. Of course, if you want to follow along with us, want to know more about that, the Expanse Telltale game we're going to be playing through in the bad guy drummer style, you can follow us on all the social medias at Bald Move, except for TikTok. We're at Baldest Move there. And if you'd like to support what we're doing, if you like what we're doing here at Star Trek and you want to keep us going, honestly, probably could, you know, it hasn't really set in, but with the strike looming, probably going to be not as many new projects coming out, which is probably our bread and butter. If you want to help help us through some of these tough times coming up, we could use your support. Support.baldmove.com. It's quick and easy. To give us your direct support, and you get a bunch of cool stuff, ad-free feeds, bonus audio video content. support.baldmove.com. Thanks very much for joining us on our continuing mission here at Strange New Worlds. We'll be back next week. I think next week is the musical number. I'm very excited to see what a musical episode of Star Trek looks like.
Yeah,
and Jim is very not excited.
I'm curious about it. I don't think it's going to be my favorite episode, but I'm curious to see who sings and who doesn't. Who does the Shatner version of singing and who really goes for it?
Who gets the Universal Translator of singing? Who gets auto-tuned and who can actually do it?
That's any predictions? Any guesses as to who's going to be like the spoil sport, who won't?
I bet a Hurricane belt.
Oh, yeah.
I bet she can belt.
I bet in a surprise, Spock is going to be really good.
I was actually saying, is that guy's Ethan Peck? Because I haven't learned all these cast names. I bet Anson Mount is terrible.
He's going to do the Shatner thing. If anybody's going to do the Shatner like speech singing thing, it's going to be him.
Oh God, I forgot.
Oh, it'd be great if
Shatner
they had James Kirk on it and they had him do that, wouldn't it?
Oh my God.
A rocket man.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm the rocket man.
That'd be so good. They gotta do that.
Yeah, you still have that album? Because you used to own
Transform Man. Yeah, I have all of Shatner's albums. You got me the Christmas one last year, 2 years ago.
He hasn't seen Voyager, but he owns every LP that Shatner's ever made.
Yeah,
hasn't even seen the old series all the way through, but he has every album Shatner's made. That's a podcast for this week. We'll see you next time. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.